It's Tuesday morning, up about 8. First, I gotta thank God for another day. I've been searching all weekend on my phone so I can hear the podcast of the Crunch Zone. Blogs, videos, and pictures too. I just hit the website, ain't no need for the news. I finally found a place where I can call on my own, cause they the best thing smoking on top of the throne. And that's the Crunch Zone. Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone. You ain't heard about the Crunch Zone. Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone, Crunch Zone. You need to tune into that.
Get your L's up, Cards fans. You're about to enter the Crunch Zone. Here are Crumb's Revenge and U of L Sheriff 50.
Welcome to the Crunch Zone. Best thing about this week was that song. This is Mike Lindsay, also known as Crumb's Revenge. And we've got a few people joining us today. We've got
TBG.
We've got
Dave Lackford.
And we've got
your boy Ken Harbison.
Ken Harbison. You know, so we thought we would not lead off with the Kentucky game. We'll talk about things about the game. We'll talk about Atlantis. But we're also going to get to know our man Ken, who's been producing music for just about every show out there in Louisville. It's the Crunch Zone coming at you right now.
One-on-one.
All right, we got to open up the top right with Ken. I mean, we had the musical intro. Our man's over there doing. He's pumping out all the music for all the shows. Go ahead and list some of the shows that you've been putting music out for right now.
Well, right now I got You All.
Yep.
And one of the famous ones, Ramsey and Rutherford. I got a couple of them for Ramsey and Rutherford. Marcus Maben.
Yep.
Midday with Maben. Louisville Sports Live.
Yep.
My goodness.
What I like about them is they're all a little bit different. You know, it's like you make a lot of music, you give a lot of different styles to it. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about kind of your creative process? Well, what gets you going when you're like, okay, I got to make a song today. What am I going to do with this thing?
Well, that's one of the main things, to try to make it different. I don't want none of them to try to sound the same. Mm-hmm. But there really isn't a process. It's just one of those things where I just get in the studio and get to playing the keys, and however it goes is however it goes. But majority of the times, it all turns out well.
And you got some serious gear, because I saw on Periscope or something, you posted it on Twitter. Maybe it was just a video on Twitter. I mean, you got a for real setup at home.
Yeah. I mean, where you got to? I mean, but I should at this point in the stage of where I am right now in my career. I mean, I've been doing this forever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it's only right for me to be able to have exactly what I need.
Okay, and I didn't get this out at the beginning, so let's get this out now, because you need to follow Ken if you're not. So go ahead, what's your Twitter name?
Twitter name is my name, Ken Harbison. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Harbison. Same thing with Facebook. You can follow me on Facebook as well.
Okay. So, you know, when you're making music for these radio shows and we're getting to play them and then we have to turn around, sometimes you're like, hey, I got opinions too, though. You know, this game wasn't so good. You know, this Kentucky game. So let's ask you a couple questions about what's going on in your world. We'll get back to the music here in a second. So what kind of song would come up after this Kentucky game?
I don't know.
A real sad one?
Yeah. Definitely. I don't know. It definitely was a heartbreaker. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so anything slow, sad.
Hello, darkness, my old friend, just on a loop.
Depressing. You can go ahead and add in that, because it was ridiculous, let's put it that way.
Yep. What are some of your inspirations for music, the kind of music that you like to when you're just by yourself listening to music?
I listen to a lot of old school music. I'm not really, I don't knock any of the new school music these days, but I just can't get into it. Mm-hmm. But I listen to a lot of old school music. That's where I kind of like get some of my inspiration from.
Yeah,
I cannot get it from none of this
Lil Yachty stuff. You know, like Lil Boat.
They run it. Rappers running out of nicknames.
Yeah,
man.
Pistol Starter or whatever. I can't get into none of that. I can't.
You know, I'm the same way. So I listen to a lot of rap growing up, and I'll listen to it if it's on. You know, like someone's got something on that's new, but the only thing I can think of is like, okay, well, those aren't my battles anymore. You know, I'm an older guy. I do different things. You know, so maybe it doesn't make sense to me anymore, because it's just like I'm fighting different battles. That song has nothing to do with me anymore. I don't know. What do you think it is for you?
It's just a different style. Mm-hmm. And I just can't. The reason why I can't get into it, because all of it sounds the same. Mm-hmm. every I don't know exactly what station you listen to. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I haven't even been listening to
96.5.
No, none of them.
Yeah,
I'm listening to sports radio.
Yeah,
me too.
Yep.
I'm not arrogant, but I'm either listening to sports radio or listening to me.
Yeah, that's good.
But I can't get into them because they all sound the same.
So when you're listening to you, you can't help but to pick your own song apart a bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
oh,
yeah. I'll make a video, and I'll watch it. Like, why are you watching your own video? I'm like, I'm not really watching it. You know, I'm seeing all the stuff I missed I could have done. I could have done it differently. So you probably can't even enjoy your own music.
Well, you know what? Mine is like it's a process. I don't know how it is with you when you make videos, but I will probably let me say, for example, the one that I did for you all, I will listen to that maybe 30 times, mm-hmm. if not more,
mm-hmm.
before I even do any final mixing or mastering or anything like that. I'm not about to, okay, I'm done with it, let's go ahead and get, no.
Yeah,
because I like myself to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to listen to it several times, and yeah. I mean it's not going to be a let me just listen to it in the studio. I'm going to listen to it in the studio. I'm going to listen to it in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to listen to it on a stereo somewhere just to kind of like get different perspectives. But I listen to it 1,000 times before I finalize anything.
Yeah, well, I would say the finished product often sounds like that's what went down. So. But we definitely like ours. I mean, I don't mean to hog the mic, so if y'all got some questions, absolutely throw them out.
Yeah. All right, so I saw in one of your videos, you know, you were rocking out on a guitar, and you're not just like a producer who only works on a beat machine, right, or like on a keyboard. Like, you're actually a musician. How many instruments you play that you feel confident claiming?
Rewind that back. I try my best. Let me put it that way. I try my best. I can't play the guitar. I can play what I need.
Okay.
So
you're comfortable with like a couple of chords here?
Yeah,
and there.
Yeah. I can't just pick it up and just rock out.
Okay.
I can't do that. You know, I got some friends who can, but I can't do that.
So is that sort of the process that you do when you're piecing it together? You try to get as much like live instrumentation as possible?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's some of the coolest stuff you've worked with as far as like just when you heard it, you know, you started nodding your head and you knew that this shit bangs.
It comes from a guitar, I would say.
Yeah.
Normally, if I'm playing that and I may hit something that just like, you know, I'll go ahead and put that down and then it doesn't take long. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't take long. I mean, because sometimes I can go in there and, you know, I can do something without a guitar. I can do something without playing a piano or anything. You know, my daughter, I'm starting to use her more because she plays the flute.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can go in there and do things without those, but sometimes I can come in there and I can just have it in my mind and I can just be like, you know what, let me just play around a little bit. Then once something picks up,
phew. Yeah, you know, once you hear it, you know that's what you want to go and you want to kind of build upon, right? Like
right.
Making music's kind of like building something out of Legos.
Right.
You got to go one block at a time. For all you young heads that don't know about 8-tracks, that's, you know, like how we used to record music. One track and layer the next one. And
the thing about you all's is it, and you know, you all can, you know, listen to it as many times as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about you all's, it all started from the beatboxing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just me just playing around. And once I started doing that,
my bad.
Important. That's pretty important. That was a president.
That was the idea going off on starting with the beatbox.
But it started with the beatbox, and then once I got the beat right, it didn't take long to put the beat together.
Okay.
So I mean, it was just I won't say it was a quick process, but it was.
Hey, when it works, it works. You know.
Oh yeah.
And people say you can't rush perfection. Sometimes you can't. Overthinking it is the worst you can do. You know. And
yeah.
Both of you guys should know that because you all actually create stuff.
Well, you know, I heard especially at the beginning of the song, I hear a little bit of Easy and also a little bit of Ice-T.
Oh yeah.
Like six
oh,
in
yeah.
the morning.
Oh yeah.
Police
yeah.
at my door.
Oh yeah.
You know?
And that was kind of like one of the makeups of it. Once
yeah.
I started beatboxing, I was
yeah.
like, okay, this is old school.
Yeah.
So let me just take it back.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it popped in my mind.
Yeah.
But once I started building it, that's when it started coming out to be. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh man, this is, if you don't like Eazy-E, then you ain't gonna like this. Yeah. So you know, I mean, it was
yeah, and you know, talking about being kind of an old head and not being able to listen to new music, I would have felt really awkward if you'd given me something that sounded like Dram, you know, or that's a new rapper, okay. Like, you know, or Lil Yachty or Lil Bodie. I think that's actually the same dude. Yeah, alter egos or something. But anyway,
he's got a vast vocabulary. He's deep with synonyms.
Wordplay.
I don't even know who that is.
Don't worry about it.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine without.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, just go listen to Eazy Does It.
So, are you from Kentucky?
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
From Louisville, from Shively? From Louisville. Okay, from so Louisville. You're a Louisville fan?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I know you said the game hurt, but I can't assume that you're not, you know, you might have had some Kentucky, you know, family members and all that.
So, how did you initially get on doing intros for people on local radio?
It started with Louisville Sports Live. This is before it was 93.9. I think they were on 680, I think. Came on right after Jason Anderson. I also had one for Jason Anderson, too.
Okay.
I was listening to the thing that kind of caught my eye is, well, caught my ear, is they was playing hip-hop music. And when they start playing that, I started paying attention. I was already listening to Jason Anderson anyway.
Yep.
But I started paying more attention. And I started finding out when they start coming on. So I just contacted them. Mm-hmm. I talked to Ethan. And we worked out a sweet little deal. And it was just one of those, like I said, I'm not arrogant.
Yeah.
Y'all don't take it the wrong way.
Yep.
But it was just one of those little, how it's been laid in one hitters.
Yeah.
Where I send it to you and they loved it.
Yeah.
So once it started from there, it just kind of like was a domino effect within the studio. Yeah. You know, everyone wanted it from Ramsey and Rutherford. Even when we dealing with Nick, I did something with him for his father I think it was the Hall of Fame Sports Weekend or something like that or whatever. I think it had something to do with some golf, but it was just boom, 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 boom.
That's good.
And that's how it was being. I'm not going to spoil the other one's thunder, but I actually have some coming next year, and this is kind of like a grade up. It's just on TV.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice,
I'm busy. Been working.
Well, you get more exposure, you know, and then more people asking about you and you know, get to know who you are, and then obviously you do good work. So that's good.
And it turns into the, you know, we're all sitting around doing the Crunch Zone podcast, like, man, how come we can't get a beat from Ken? It's kind of messed up. Everybody else got a Ken beat. Can we get a Ken beat? Can we get that intro? And now we got a Ken intro. So
yeah, Kentro.
I feel like, you know, we're on level playing field with everybody else. They can't big time us for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know you're going to have to get back out here. Ken drove a while to get here. It's raining and all that kind of stuff. But before you go, let's get you a couple level questions. What is one of your all-time favorite players? Football and basketball.
Wow.
Long time now.
Oh, man.
You get to pick one, and that means the rest will have to say they're number two.
Let me say Michael Bush.
Okay.
And since there isn't, I don't want to say there isn't, I'm pretty sure you all are going to run tables around as far as Kentucky game. Yep. When he played in the Kentucky game.
Yeah.
And he, you know, what did he break for?
He had like 140 yards and 3 touchdowns at halftime in that last one.
I mean, it was like one play where he just took off.
Yeah, it's probably like 60 yards or something like that.
Yeah, straight down the middle. I mean, that's one thing that kind of like
and
sticks
in my
head. And
the whole team's chasing him behind him, that photo. Right. I remember the photo. Right. So
you all can inject that if you would like, you know, in the Kentucky game.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of sad. But basketball, man, I can't really.
And there are wrong answers.
Man, he threw you on the spot here. I'm the same way when people are like, pick your favorite of one thing. I'm like, can I pick my favorite from each decade? You know, or like with anything, music, sports, whatever. I can't.
You can bring one to the pickup game.
I don't know. Let me just say, Garcia.
Okay.
I say Garcia because he's tall.
Francisco. Yeah.
He can shoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I can dump it down to him.
Yeah.
So,
you know what I hated about Francisco is once he was gone, he was gone. Like, you know, he had so much popping the jersey, and he played up the crowd, and he had so much fun. But when he was gone, he was gone. Like I don't know if he ever came back one time.
Where is he from?
He's from Dominican Republic, I think.
Moved to New York.
From the Bronx.
He had a crazy upbringing, man. They had to escape. Him and his mother fled from his dad.
Okay.
And then he's all like, you talk to guys that hang out up in New York, ask them about the games at the Rucker that Cisco was in, playing for Fat Joe's team. Because there's a tournament that goes on every summer, and I was always terrified that we were going to get in trouble for that. Like Fat Joe was like bought his mom a crib or something.
Yeah.
But like a lot of rappers in the neighborhoods would sponsor from like their borough and bring them all, you know, the Rucker, and he was always on Fat Joe's team.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I love Francisco Garcia too because he was so much fun, and when he was on, man, I mean, you were just like, oh he's making it from anywhere, you know, and it was just such a weapon to have on your team, you know. Had a little extra guys with him in that Final Four, you know. Yeah, although he didn't play great,
that hurt.
Yeah,
that hurt. They just couldn't. I don't understand that. I don't want to get into it because I know you all are. But what's up with this shooting from the threes, man? I mean, we can shoot, but
so it seems like the same thing every year. It's like eventually Rick has to pull it down and say start underneath. We'll work our way to the outside, but. Everyone starts jacking him up, you know. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know that we'll be, and we will talk about this kind of stuff later. But you know, I don't know that we'll be a great shooting team. And you know, two reasons: one, because he had to work on everyone shooting; two is because you just heard his whole recruiting emphasis. Bring me shooters. I need shooters. He's like, you're just telling us right now that you don't have any shooters, and then next year you're going to need a lot of shooters, not just one shooter, but you want everyone to be able to shoot because you're shooting deficient. So I think the cards are going to be up and down on that. So we're just going to when they're jacking them up and they're off, it's going to be we've seen that in the past where you're like we're like 4 of 20, and it's like that's not how you win a basketball game.
That's one of my things. I just bury my head when that happens because it's like you're not hitting. Yeah. I mean, you want to keep shooting, but
don't be afraid of it.
Man, drive to the hole, drive to the hole. You know, try to get the foul or
and we
something.
Shoot free throws well. We're shooting like 75%. That's high. That's high for a Louisville team lately. In the last few years.
No kidding.
You know, so getting the line's not a bad thing. So, all right, Ken, thanks for stopping in for the one-on-one interview. Thanks for your the Kentro that we got on our
Kentro. I'm gonna start saying that.
There you go for the podcast. And man, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And I hope you have a good Christmas.
Oh man, I did, man. Y'all do the same. Hey, anytime y'all want to have me, y'all let me know. I'll come out here.
We'll do this.
I'll make sure I get out here early.
Plug the ribs.
Hey, let me tell you something about these ribs.
Yeah.
I'm not hating on the seafood lady, but let me tell you something about these ribs. She ain't got nothing on these ribs, right? I know she do seafood, but she ain't got nothing. I came out here, and I ate it. I'm going to get another one to go.
Yeah.
Probably two.
Yeah.
But I came out here, and I'm telling you, the ribs are – let me do my Food Network thing. My guy, what's his name? Guy Fieri. Fieri.
Yep.
The ribs, they melt in your mouth. They're juicy. And then the sauce, that you know, it has a nice little tangy – okay, that's enough.
He's talking about 100%. Jimmy G had ribs giving with friends. He brought some tasters in here for us, and we're all fighting over them.
Look, when we're all down in the dumps, all you can do is feed your friends barbecue. That's how I live. So
that
glad
works.
Y'all enjoyed. Hope it was a nice bookend to this terrible, terrible weekend, and let's just move on.
All right, folks. Well, thanks again, Ken. And, folks, we're going to move on to the game recap.
Game of the week.
All right, game recap. We have to do it. Now, here's the deal. No one wants to recap that game. We hated that game. So what we'll do is talk about things about the game, you know, whether it's the fans or something we saw in the stands or something we saw in the media booth.
Can anybody confirm if a UK fan did, in fact, shit their pants at the game? Because somebody was tweeting out about it, and they're like, I'm not going to be a jerk and take pictures, but other people around us have. I didn't go seek out, you know, the poo-stained britches of a UK fan, but I didn't know if you all.
Well, you got the famous Kentucky photo already, so maybe it's just the guy just came back. You know, I don't know.
Glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
It is always entertaining. This is Mark Blankenbaker, by the way.
Mark is also with us here. He wasn't on the initial because we just didn't have five microphones. So welcome, Mark. Welcome, Mark.
It always is interesting to see Kentucky fans in the stands and in the post-mortem of any game at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. Because it's this huge novelty that there's alcohol at a football game and how they can actually not handle it. They go way too crazy, way too hard. And I think what it is they go so hard in the parking lot because they think that they have 3.5 hours to sober up.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, crap, I forgot they actually serve alcohol in the stadium. And then so they just keep going.
It's a double dose.
And it's just like collapse. But after a good win like that, if you're a Kentucky fan, drink your ass off.
A buddy of mine, I guess he was just finding the best seat he could, and he was second row. He's like, look for me, second row. Kentucky section. Look over, and there's nothing but happy Kentucky people and his miserable ass in a Trinity shirt because he didn't want to wear U of L or UK. He was just trying to be neutral so he wouldn't get his butt beat in the game or something. If he, you know, but I don't know. I you go to these games and you know already rivalry games you just don't know what to expect. And the way the game started, it felt pretty good, and it took about 1 second for that feel-good to go away when they do a bomb pass and score back in one play, and we're just like, what in the heck is that all about?
Why is D.
And we
Smith,
saw it a couple of times. We saw more than one time.
Yeah, why is D. Smith so far behind? I mean, why is he looking in the backfield like that? Why is D. Smith looking in the backfield like that?
I'm sure Dave broke it down a little
bit. He's a sophomore in college. That's junior high.
Well, that's why there's so much chaos in college football. You're dealing with kids, and coaches have to understand that kids are probably going to make a mistake. So you gear your game plan up for this. You know the I don't want to say stupidity.
Path of least resistance. Whatever's going to cause the least damage.
Well, you dumb it down, right?
You got to factor in that a kid's going to screw up. So you dumb it down and make it as simple as you can. Don't worry about the running back. Don't worry about the play action. That's not your responsibility. You got over the top. We're in cover four. We're in cover three. You got deep, man. Nobody gets behind you. Last line of defense, yada, yada. But kids are aggressive. Kids want to make plays. You know, kids want to be on SportsCenter.
They're fired up because it's a rivalry game.
Yep, and that's where the mistakes happen. But Johnson's a really good deep ball thrower. That's something that I'm sure the defensive staff knew. But their offensive line, man, they've been recruiting well. They get those big corn-fed white boys out in the county, and they come through. They have good technique. They're coached in the flex option, the wing T, the wishbone. So these are big guys that come in, and they know how to run block, and then they get coached up how to pass protect well. And they stymie the pass rush. And when a quarterback sits back there and can knit a sweater for a Danny Cannell, you see that turtleneck?
The turtleneck.
Hey, did he not look like number two from Austin Powers?
That's right.
Amazing.
Put a patch on him.
But my point is, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on the secondary. And, you know, you got fast receivers. The Kentucky receivers are fast. They just can't catch for shit. And then they decided that on Saturday they were going to catch everything. Dorian Baker made a phenomenal catch. He never catches that. If he caught that against Florida in 2014, then that streak would have been snapped. But he dropped the hell out of it. But this one, he kind of palmed my man Walker in the ear hole a little bit. He didn't redirect Walker, though. Walker didn't, like, really his body didn't contort much. So, you know, they didn't call it. It was just some hand fighting. You're allowed to get your hands in there a little bit. You can't just shove them. And he just used it to position himself, reached down and caught it. And I said to myself, holy shit, Dorian Baker caught a pass.
He didn't drop it.
In his life.
When that happened, I was like, this is not going to be a fun day for me.
And then look at James Quick. You know, James Quick had his moment to make that catch.
And he didn't.
And it went right through his hands and bounced off his bicep. And it's like you juxtapose those two guys, you know, those two beleaguered wide receivers, you know, that came in with all the big expectations. Because Dorian Baker was supposed to be the man coming in out of Ohio. He was a 4-star, highly rated recruit, and he just didn't pan out. The Kentucky fans just point to certain drops that cost them in big games, and James Quick is the same way. And Baker came out on top in this one, and now James Quick's going to be gone.
And to your point, 30, I think it was 30 passes for Steven Johnson, 0 sacks. Not even sure we got a quarterback hit in there, except for the one that was a penalty. That D'Angelo
Brown. How many turnovers did they have for the game? Because, I mean, that seemed to be the biggest difference to me. Was
Johnson
that they
threw a pick. I think Johnson had one pick.
And Tremaine Washington got it. And it was actually pass interference on D. Smith. He hit the player early, and they didn't call it, and it landed right in Tremaine Washington's lap. I think that was it. Or did they get that? No. Remember, Chris Williams jerked that ball out, so they got
two. So that's two takeaways versus how many?
Three.
I mean, how many did we have? Lamar himself had 4, if you count the interception on the last play as well.
Yeah, he had
two fumbles and two picks.
Yeah, two fumbles, two picks.
He had a pick early that should have been a handoff.
You can't do that shit, man. Yeah. Like, you can't – when you're playing a game that's as back and forth as we are, and that was what was so frustrating about it, is that it felt like, you know, I never had any doubt that we couldn't move the ball down the damn field. I just didn't know if we'd hold on to the ball.
Right.
And, yeah,
just like the
last play.
Game. Same thing happened in the Clemson game. All those turnovers, they came back and bit you, you know?
Yeah, no, so for me, it was the James Quick dropped touchdown. Play one on defense, D. Smith. The interception right before in the inside the 30 that went off Cole Hikutini's hands.
Yeah.
And then finally, Lamar Jackson's fumble. I just look at the first play of the last three games of the season, right? Malik Williams fumbles the football. Jalen Smith fumbles the football. And then D. Smith, obviously defensively, you know, with a huge bomb allowed. And I'm thinking, that's not a way to start. You know what I mean? Like, and it just doesn't – like, Louisville football did not start well. They did offensively, obviously, in the Kentucky game. But defensively, they had a breakdown. So, possession number one for offense and defense just never really got going this year or in the final three games. And I'd really like to know why. I'd like to know what happened to the team that I saw games 1-9 to happen with games 10-12. I want to know.
Grantham's defense is a gambling defense. They're not extremely disciplined, but they're chaotic, and they bring havoc with different pass rushing looks. And they didn't get any pressure. Once you don't get any pressure and you're not disciplined and you have small corners and safeties, especially the safeties. Safeties have been pretty undisciplined all year long, and they got exposed. And Josh Harvey Clemens wasn't there, and then True blew his hamstring out. So, you know, it was a perfect storm.
Shaq was hobbling a couple of times. Of
plays. I saw him.
Shaq was patchwork.
Shaq's been
hurt
all year.
Yeah.
Shaq's been him in and out of the lineup.
Harvey Clemens, too.
But, I mean, on that, there was one touchdown that he pulled up, you know, and grabbed his leg.
Yeah.
You know, on a deep route.
And I don't know where Chucky was on that. I don't know. Fans will be like, oh, Chucky Williams should have been there. But you don't know Chucky's assignment.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So unless you're a coach.
There is one good thing that came out of the secondary. I think we know moving forward, Kane Pass is going to be a problem for people.
Yeah. I liked Kane in the game.
He hit like a freight train and made two great pass play breakups in the end zone.
In the end zone. The fade route.
So that was nice.
Was that Kane both times? I feel like it was Kane once and then Chucky the other time. Chucky got one.
Chucky got another one.
There was
Kane
two
got
perfect
two.
Throws, man.
Yeah.
The back-to-back plays in the end zone. Those are great plays. But, you know, turnovers are going to kill you. And that's the thing. Those two plays right there swung momentum. And then, you know, and Louisville had that game won. If Lamar would have just handed that ball off or set the ball up on the hash mark, you know. But, again, that's play calling. You have to think, who's my quarterback?
Right.
Lamar Action Jackson, who tries to do everything he can, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's still running the ball with it out like a loaf of bread, doing crazy shit. So risk minimalization is what you have to think if you're Bobby Petrino. So you know what I do? I go ahead and give it to Smith or
didn't we have Radcliffe. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Was it on that series or was it earlier in the game where they got some good goal line stops on us when we were handed
that was
off?
A big yes.
Radcliffe was getting shut down.
We kicked a field goal early as a result of those stops.
But you want to kill clock in that situation. And like I said, risk minimalization.
You know, but also it was tied up. You know what I'm saying? So we were going to take a 7-point lead.
We were going to take
the 7-point lead. That way you say, okay, even if we give it back to these guys with 2 minutes I think it was 2 minutes and some change, instead of letting them just eat the clock up, drive down, kick a field goal and win, I'd feel better as a coach if I lose that way. That's just me personally.
Well,
I hate losing on a field goal.
And one would think that's Bobby's MO, but in the press conference he did say all he had to do was hand the ball off and he kept it and he did too much. So Bobby himself is this is me quoting Bobby here.
Right.
He's inside the 9. I mean, he's inside the 10. So all you have to do is legitimately run for no gain. You do not have to have a first down.
Make Kentucky use their timeouts.
And, in fact, having Kentucky stop you is a good thing because if you get stopped 3 times and you are inside the 10, you just have to kick basically what's an extra point to win the game. And if your kicker somehow misses, you do go to overtime. You do not lose the game. By fumbling with a minute 45, you allow Kentucky to drive the field, go down there, and kick a field goal of their own and basically kill all of the clock that was remaining.
It's a game of momentum in college football, man. Emotions. You see the emotions early. Like, you'll see a team come out all fired up and take a lead, and then all of a sudden you're like, all right, that lead ain't safe because their emotions are gone. But at the end of the game, the last thing you want to do is give a team emotion, and that's what they did. And they went down there, and that kid booted that 47-yarder, man.
Well, I knew that was trouble because he booted a 54-yarder to beat Mississippi State.
That was.
I was like,
I wish we had their
O-line. Anything less than 50, I'm kind of worried about that.
I wish we had their O-line and their kicker. But there is absolutely no worse feeling as a football fan than the anxiety and just the, man, unless this guy screws this up, which probably won't happen, there's nothing worse than watching the kicker trot out on the field and you know that this dude's about to beat us.
Like, I thought he was going to miss it, man. I said, this is Kentucky football. He's shanking that.
That is typical. Typically, what happens to Kentucky is that something crazy happens at the end of the game that caused them to lose. They didn't have that. Instead, it was Louisville pulling a Kentucky. And unfortunately, it was Lamar Jackson that did it. But
I was praying for the ghost of Devery Henderson on that kickoff. after they kicked the field goal and
like
they
a block,
it back, I'm just like
a kick six type return.
Well, I'm just like, man, dump Gatorade on him so I know it's gonna happen.
So I know it's real.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with that, you know, even on that last play, by the way, that was impressive that Lamar pretty much just chucked it all the way down there. That confirmed how far he can throw it. But, you know, once they started making that drive, I knew that was trouble. You know, just because they came to play. You know, they were and this is what I brought this up at the beginning of the year, and some people kind of laughed. I said Kentucky's going to be bowl eligible when they play Louisville instead of having something to choke on, because what their MO has been the last few years is they've got a lot of guys that are good, they're talented, but they don't focus on the mental game, so they kind of crumble when it counts, when something's really important.
Yeah.
And they have something to choke on, they actually do choke on it. Well, now they have nothing to choke on because they're like, we're going bowling, so we haven't done that in years, so we're already the town heroes. And now all we have to do is kind of just show up and have fun. And that just let the athleticism just take over for Kentucky, because they do have some good players on that team. So that was the number one thing I was worried about at the beginning of the year. And then sure enough, it kind of played out.
I rarely attend games live, so please don't, you know, crucify me for saying this. We got to be louder than what we were. I mean, it was embarrassing to watch it on TV with how quiet it was.
You're a fan. You have one job.
Like, that's it. I mean, yeah. And don't give me shit about, well, you don't go to the game. Well, it's not my job to yell because I'm on the couch, man. My neighbor's going to think I'm crazy if I'm yelling. You're the one that paid for the ticket. What's wrong with you? Like, why aren't you there getting rowdy? Why aren't you there getting hyped? That's really disappointing to me when you're playing your rival at home, man.
And we know how important that is. We saw in the Clemson game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, much of a change it was for our team to deal with.
How much shit do U of L fans have to endure and not learn from? You know, like stop saying overlooking teams like Houston on a Thursday night when they play in a less than spectacular conference. That used to be us.
Right.
We know that that you're running into a buzzsaw. Crowd control, crowd noise, you know, stuff like that. That's all we complained about coming out of the Clemson game. And rightfully so, we should have complained because you couldn't hear anything. Let's get louder.
Yeah.
You know?
I do think that the scheduled part, that what you're just talking about, is that the ACC and U of L and all of its membership need to work together to smartly construct a schedule. Because Louisville came out with this blitzkrieg of a season. They played Clemson and Florida State in the first 5 weeks, and that's great for building up a cachet to drive you through the season. But don't close the conference championship or the conference slate and then go around in a five-game turnaround play on the road at Houston, and when you're sandwiched in between the conference schedule and your rival. That's like the worst possible spot to put a game that really doesn't matter all that much, really, if you think about it. Like, either extend the conference schedule to that week or move that game earlier, or play like you're Charlotte there. Yeah. Don't play Houston on the road there. That's got everything in the world.
Scotty Davenport was talking about his opinion on the problem with that schedule that they had also was that they knew they had all these games up front. So those guys were laser focused, working hard all summer. They came out, there were lights on fire. They were ready to go. And he said then you had six games where everyone basically said it's impossible for you all to lose. These teams are so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he said what happened was is they were winning games and not improving. And they just kind of got into some bad habits, and they just weren't doing the things they were doing at the beginning that they were focusing on so hard.
What I said last week when the question was asked, what are you concerned about? And, yeah, we were all – I'm not going to say anybody was overly cocky or arrogant, because when you beat a team for 6 years in a row, why in the hell would you expect that you're not going to beat them seven?
You are properly cocky.
Yeah, like you've earned the chin up, so to speak, right. The nose in the air at that point. But I said that I was really concerned about apathy. And, you know, somebody shot it down real quick and convinced me that, that'll never happen with a rival. It happened with a rival. And that was the thing. We looked unfocused. We looked apathetic. We looked like a team down the stretch that's been watching ESPN too much.
Right.
And they're doing too much fanboying of each other and themselves. And, you know, that's on coaching. Because I'm not mad at a kid who's, you know, we all have egos.
We expect them to get sucked into that.
Yeah, when you're 20.
It's the adult that needs to shake them out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And And there's been some legitimate question marks on the coaches.
Yeah. About when Lamar was doing the Heisman pose, it's like, you know, this game
win the game.
This game isn't. Yeah. I don't know what game you're playing. I mean, but this game we're all not losing this game.
Come on, man.
I mean, he's going to win the Heisman.
Did you see the play made before that?
I'm just.
He jumped up. That was fine. A phenomenal freaking superhuman.
That's
Marvel superhero.
But you know what it told me? It told me he had Heisman on the brain.
Of course he got Heisman on the brain.
The coach got to make him think Kentucky on the brain.
Of course, did you see the play just
made? That's what I think.
Four turnovers and a loss to Kentucky at the end of your season is hard to argue that one deserves a Heisman after that. Now, I'm not saying that I hope I'm wrong on this. I mean, hell, the year that Tebow won, the Gators went 9-3, and he had 30 passing, 20 rushing
Tebow
touchdowns.
Tebow is the most corny, milquetoast white dude in the fucking world, dog.
You will never get me to argue against that. I'm talking about the 30 and 20. I'm talking about
the 100%
stats.
Agreement.
I'm talking about stats purely. I hate Tim Tebow more than – oh, dude, don't
no,
even
you
get
don't
me started
Tim
on that.
No, you
don't
hate Tim Tebow more than me.
Oh, I
here's the thing.
I don't care what's on your head. I still – You should have to endure him as a Florida State fan. I shouldn't have to watch Tim Tebow all the fucking time on my television.
I like Tim Tebow as an announcer, by the way.
I like him as a baseball player.
He's good as an announcer. Because
I don't watch baseball.
Louisville football needs to avoid becoming Texas A&M and Baylor, right? Teams that come out hot and they jump up the rankings every single year. They put up crazy offensive numbers. They even have quarterbacks that win Heismans.
They've got cute jerseys.
And great jerseys. But then when it comes down to, you know, brass tacks, college football playoff, November, they fall apart. Mm-hmm. And Louisville needs to avoid that in the worst way imaginable. Now, I'm going to throw two stats out there that really bother me. The first, I know we've already talked about the turnovers, right? But Louisville has 22 lost fumbles this year. Mm-hmm. That's more than any other program in 16, 2015, 2014, and 2013. You have to go back to 2012, 5 years of college football, to find a team that's lost that many fumbles. That's number one. Now, two, Louisville gave up more yards against Kentucky, 581, to the number 57 offense in the country. That's more yardage than Louisville football has given up since Steve Cragthorpe's second year against Rutgers in December 4th, 2008. And Kentucky had 8.07 yards per play, only Clemson at 8.18. Nobody else even came close to half of that against Louisville this year. So what happened in this game?
Right.
Like, what happened to our depth? What happened to our scheme? They had 10 days. They had 10 days.
This is the brutal part about losing to a scrub team like them. And I don't care that they beat us. You beat us, congratulations. I still don't respect your program or what you ran. It was good enough to beat us because our coaches they mailed it in. We lost with them running a damn high school offense. Seeing the Wildcat be successful in 2012 pissed me off. Right. In 2016, there's absolutely no excuse
for
that.
There's no excuse for it, no.
None whatsoever. Right. And I've spent 3 years defending Grantham. I've spent a season on this podcast defending Grantham and his defense because fans have been pissed about him, and I'm not necessarily going to throw shade at him, but I'm not defending him either.
Yeah.
Like, you make $1 million a year, bro. You want to be a head coach. That's the rumor, the word. Yeah. Get it together. You don't lose to Kentucky if you want to be a head football coach.
Right. Well, here's the thing about that I think that Devontae Fields and James Hearns both together mailed it in collectively. I think they no-showed in that game. And you know what? They both want to be pros. And, you know, we talked earlier in the year about not throwing shade on James Quick. He's not going to be a pro, okay? He's going to be a college athlete, and that's going to be it for him. Devontae Fields and James Hearns are going to go make money in the NFL. They cannot roll out the red carpet and expect to be at that level on an NFL team where they're going to get coaches fired. And then so what's going to happen is they're going to go get cut. You cannot get that far upfield when teams are just running the football on you. You're not going to hit the quarterback. You know they're running the football. Don't give up the edge like that. That's your responsibility. Sorry. And, you know, for Kentucky to average 8.07 yards per play is unbelievably bad.
I got to chime in here for a minute, man. Two things. Number one, the way Kentucky used the Wildcat is actually pretty strategic because here's why. They have a big-ass line that beats the shit out of you, and then they got Benny Snell who runs it down your throat. I like a team that comes out in the third quarter when your starting guys are starting to wear down a little bit, and they just throw overhand right. That's taking you out to the woodshed and giving you some body blows and then finishing you off with the nasty uppercut.
What Louisville used to do with Michael Bush.
Right. And that's what they did on that drive. They came in there, and I said, and my son Jace was watching the game, and he was like, why do they keep running that same play? I'm like, watch, they're wearing them down. You ain't going to see that quarterback get touched again once they get out of it. Because they don't run it the whole game. They're not Arkansas. You know, it's not the Wild Hog. And they, right. They did. And what happened on that drive when they were running Wildcat? Did they score on that or get a field goal?
Well, you know what they
pretty
did?
Pretty sure there were multiple drives where they were running the Wildcat.
Yeah. The one I'm thinking about is the third quarter where they just put Snell in there and it was just the same. And they used to do that with
Louisville had the ball for about 60 seconds in the third quarter.
Right.
The defense was out Lamar, like the whole Lamar threw game. That pick.
But what Kentucky started doing, they had one drive where they ran it almost exclusively. But then what they started doing is they ran – typical formation, traditional offense on first down, and then pretty much in the third quarter, every single second play was only Wildcat, and that was like their strategy. So we're gonna see what we pick up on first and second. And Louisville did okay on first down, but they were absolute crap on second against the Wildcat, and so that's why it stands out in everybody's mind that they were running so much Wildcat because that's where they were successful. And then when Louisville actually did stop the Wildcat, they somehow converted on third down.
And on that deep ball. That Garrett Johnson threw in the beginning.
Yeah.
I said, look at that. That kid's out here like Tim Tebow, because that's what I hated that. They would line up Rainey, and they would line up the other cat, Demps, right next to Tebow. So they got like two fast backs, and they got Boom, and they got Snell. And then they would just read option, fake. Then Tebow would take a step forward. The whole D would come up, and he would just toss it over the top to Percy Harvin with his crappy arm, and it'd be a touchdown. And everybody would be like, oh my God, Tim Tebow's the Don.
Right.
I couldn't stand that. And that's what Garrett Johnson did, and that annoyed me. But as the game went on, I noticed that's what they kept running with. It was just, man, we're going to attack you with the threat of the run and get your safeties to come up, and we're going to throw it over your head. And that is high school football. You dumb it down for your dummies, and they won.
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought that Mark Stoops and Kentucky, I think that they did a nice job, but I think it says the last three games of the year say a lot more about Louisville than it really does about the three teams that they played. Because I don't think that that was the same team that we saw to start the season. And I would really like to know why. I would like to know what's going on. Is it defensive depth? Is it the fact that Shaq Wiggins and Josh Harvey Clemens and, you know, you lose Drew Bailey in that game, Jamari Staples doesn't play? I mean, there's a lot of players that really, I mean, I think got banged up at the end. And so that's what we're going to end up needing, is that the difference between Louisville and a lot of teams that are still in the college football playoff is
they
have
the next
depth.
Guy.
Yeah. They got the next guy, and I don't think Louisville has that.
Are you saying that Kentucky has more depth than Louisville?
Well, I'm saying that they closed out their season, and then they played Austin Peay, and they just kind of rolled them up, whereas Louisville had to go to Houston and go get banged up.
I think the point that you're trying to make is, you know, football, we all know it's a battle of attrition, and when you get that beat up the last 3 weeks of the season, you know, I mean. And that's not just – Dave, you've talked about this numerous times. Every time you're on here, you talk about – it's not just what's on the IR, you know, the injury report.
Yeah, everybody's hurt, man.
Everybody's hurt right now in November. Sure. Yep. It's Thanksgiving. Everybody's got – is dinged up.
Harvey Clemens I didn't think needed to be out there, to be honest with you. I thought I didn't think he looked healthy, and I didn't think Shaq Wiggins did either.
Hey, but I appreciate the effort from those two.
I do. I mean – but I just thought that they weren't effective.
The other play that I wanted to talk about, and then y'all can wrap it up, because I think we've talked more about Kentucky than we planned to. The thing that really just frustrated the shit out of me, and it makes me wonder after the Houston game when you see Bobby and Grantham yelling at each other on the sidelines, I know that everyone – that the word on their relationship has always been they both are fiery, yell at each other type dudes. They don't take it with them, though. You know, it's just – it's in the moment.
That's just part of it.
It's like working in a kitchen.
Yeah, and that's fine. But living it at really, home. It really bothered me on the play when Kelsey's helmet popped off and he had to come off for the next play, and our defense was confused as shit. Mm-hmm. The four linemen were yelling at each other, trying to get each other into position. Nobody knew what the hell they were doing on that front seven. I can't account for what the secondary was doing, considering that, you know, we couldn't see them on the field, so I don't know if they were shitting the bed too.
Yeah.
Why didn't we call a timeout at that moment?
I know.
It was a huge third down play, and Kentucky saw that we were confused. They checked out of it. Quarterback made a great play.
What did that result in? What was the
result? It was a first down or a touchdown because, dude, I remember getting up and throwing things.
Well, actually, Mark Stoops had a really nice timeout. I'm going to give him some credit. Louisville lined up, and it's the staple Bobby Petrino short yardage play where you get him caught off guard. You go goal line, and it's three tight ends to the right, and then he runs play action, and then all the tight ends go to the opposite side. That's where the play is going.
Yeah.
That's what he was about to run, and Mark Stoops was like, timeout. Louisville ended up converting the first down, but it was a run play. It wasn't the tight end play that usually pops off like a huge, like 40, 50-yard gain, because a coach can scout that, and he can tell his whole team, like, you know, in a film room, hey, this is what they're going to run. But when you're in the heat of the moment and you haven't been looking at Louisville all year like we've been looking at Louisville all year, or Mark Stoops or whatever.
Well, with that play, if you've never seen Bobby Petrino coach at all, yeah, apparently yeah, you don't know about that play.
Right. That's his. But that was coming, yeah. And Mark Stoops, I thought, smartly called timeout right there and stopped it, because it was going to convert. It was absolutely going to happen. But he called timeout, and then Louisville had to check into a different play.
Funny, that play you're talking about right now, he killed Miami with that.
Yes, he did.
That was the first time I've ever been to a Louisville game, and I said, man, I like that play a lot. And I actually put it in. I tried to put it in our offense from Zeke. Okay. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, here's one more stat for you. Do you know who Kenny Potter is?
I do not.
Harry's older brother?
Harry. No.
Kenny Potter is the quarterback for San Jose State.
Oh, well, why didn't we know that, guys?
He is the only guy in America who's been sacked more times than Lamar Jackson. Jeez. So, Lamar Jackson had 38 sacks this year, 40 for Kenny Potter. That is obviously an offensive line thing we need to fix.
Hold on, because y'all were loving that offensive line coach earlier. That's
true.
Y'all were slurping him so hard.
Well, you know what? I got to be honest. He is on they did look better early.
Yeah. They were
so
playing,
what happened there?
They were playing Charlotte and Syracuse and Florida State didn't have you know, who's the kid?
Derwin James.
No,
nah, there's no. Hey, look.
No, who
no
was the kid? Oh, Sweat.
Yeah, but Sweat ain't really do shit this year. Yeah. Either. It was Brian Burns. But yo, look.
I will tell you this about
they
about
kicked
why.
Florida State's ass. That is the one thing that you don't minimize this year. I've never seen Florida State get their ass beat and look so unprepared and sloppy. Like this whole season. For Florida State has they just killed it right there.
And real quick, Red Lens Glasses fans listening to our podcast like us, Dave is a Florida State fan, so that's about as honest of a compliment you're going to get about your team this year.
Hey, and I'll tell you why I defended Klonakis and why I defended the hire, and why I was first of all really excited about the hire and telling people, no, y'all just got to chill. Mac Brown's last year in Texas, I remember watching Iowa State get robbed of a win at Texas. And I was watching that game, and I was like, who is this O-line coach? Because they are working all these five stars from Texas. I mean, you talking about bully ball earlier, it was straight dive left, dive right, punch you in the mouth every time.
Right.
And if it had been anyone else playing at Texas that day, refs don't hose them. I mean, that's one of the first games I've honestly watched as an unbiased observer and been like, yo, you got hosed by the refs. So when we hire this guy, and I'm looking up the, you know, the info on our new staff, I'm like, oh, this is a guy that was at Iowa State. This is a good thing.
Yeah. There are some rumblings that he might be up for that Nevada job.
Yeah, that's what I heard earlier. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
What, the head coach?
Yes. Yeah. I know, but that's where he's from, and he's like, you know, he's got roots there. They really like him out there.
He was the offensive coordinator under Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Oh, he was Colin the whole Kaepernick. Line and offensive coordinator at Nevada when they had Cap. So you understand why.
Fun, man.
But kind of going back to the Florida State.
Viva Las Vegas.
Kind of going back to the Florida State game. Where they had that laser focus, and Florida State is a good pro. I don't think they're like as good as they can be or have been, but they're still obviously playing really good football now. Yeah. Louisville football came out and really worked them, and they showed that they could be this explosive, super dynamic team. To see what they did in November, with the exception of Boston College, I mean, it's really disconcerting to figure out where that went to where they finished.
But they are an explosive, dynamic team. But when you play with pyrotechnics, you're going to get blown up every now and then. And that's the way it works.
Well, we'll wrap it up. I do want to say just one thing I think probably a lot of Louisville fans feel is, you know, no matter how this season finishes, and hopefully the bowl can salvage that, because, you know, you're going to remember the bowl game, and hopefully it'll be a good opponent. We can do some – save some face in that game, you know, to save what is a good season. Because right now it's hard to appreciate. You've lost two games in a row against teams that you thought you could beat, and that's just college football for you. But I think you can definitely see the progression. You know, Louisville football has taken a step forward. You know, it's not a big step, but it's a good step.
Right.
We hosted a game day, right? So that was a big deal. We were good enough now to host a game day in the first month of the season.
Yeah.
You know, that's a step forward. Now what we want to do is build the depth, make sure we've got the focus, make sure the guys know that you do have to try to improve yourself against a Boston College, not just go out and win.
Right.
And then we can host a game day at the end of the season, because that's the kind of thing I was watching with the Ohio State Michigan. I'm like, no, we're not there yet. You know, we're close, but until these guys learn these lessons, we're not going to host a game day at the end of the season, and that's the next step.
Yeah, and competing for the division, and just I think Louisville just needs to have that game, and that's what I was talking about with the league. The league needs to, if you're going to have Clemson, Florida State, and Louisville be kind of the flag bearers for your league, don't punch them all together at the front. Until the Coastal decides that they want to put out a program that is worth the college football playoff discussion, then the ACC cannot allow the ACC championship to be the final carrot, because this game means nothing for Clemson playing Virginia Tech this weekend.
Yeah, which is dangerous for Clemson. Right.
I mean, it means a lot.
It means a lot. They ain't going to the playoffs if they lose.
But it doesn't mean anything nationally is what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, look, that's the way it's always been. And if you can't win it, then you going home. So it means a lot to them. Right. But I wanted to talk about – are we about to wrap up
football? We're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap up football. But you got some points here you want to make them.
Real quick. All right, so – I wanted to dovetail off Mark saying that, Mark and Mike. Mike said, you know, we took a step forward, and the first thing in my mind was, well, what about all those years under Charlie and Teddy and the 10 wins? But you know what? That's a different era. That's the AAC.
Mm-hmm.
And
Big East, totally.
And that's not ACC. So he makes a good point.
But those were a step.
Right.
And those were steps at that time.
Yeah. It was a step to get us to where we are this year.
Right. And now Louisville's making steps. They made a step this year. They beat Florida State. They got the Heisman Trophy winner. So, you know, and Mark says you got to build the depth. All right. So I want to talk about what Louisville's losing. They're losing all the Charlie Strong guys. They're losing Hearn. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, because I think you.
Hearns may go pro. He's got another year.
Hearns is junior. He may go pro. You got Kelsey. He's gone. Quick's gone. Mm-hmm. De'Asian Richardson's gone.
No. De'Asian's got another year if he wants it. He'll be back.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I saw he was a senior on
the
website.
He had a red shirt, though. He had injury.
He had an injury last year, so
he got an extra year.
Yeah.
All right. Stacey Thomas gone.
No, I don't think so.
No, he's a sophomore.
No, Stacey? No, he's junior.
He's a sophomore at junior.
I'm pretty sure Stacey Thomas is a senior, bro.
No, they're losing D'Angelo Brown.
I'll look it up.
They're losing D'Angelo Brown, Josh Harvey Clemens.
Don't look it up. You talk.
They're going to lose.
Radcliffe, Keith Kelsey,
Radcliffe. They're losing Khalil Hunter, Keola Mahoney. Maybe Lucas McNeil, but I don't think so. But they are losing to Bia Hughley.
What about Brown? Is he gone?
D'Angelo Brown? Yes.
All right, D'Angelo Brown is gone.
They're also going to lose Jamari Staples, Cole Hikatini, Devontae Fields.
Fields is
gone. A
lot
of dudes.
Stacey Thomas is a senior, it says right here.
Yes, sir, you're right. Wow.
Yeah, sure. Nah, he didn't walk in the senior ceremony, though. So
what? His eligibility ran.
Nah, he'll be back.
He may not be graduating academically, but as far as athletically, he's done.
Right. They lose a lot of guys. That's kind of the point.
You're losing Staples, yes. Shaq Wiggins, Josh Harvey,
Shaq
Clemens.
Wiggins got another year.
He came here in 2013 and he redshirted. He played in 13 games on special teams and linebacker in 14. Played in all 13 games in 15.
What about Chuck?
GoCars.com has him as a redshirt junior.
Chucky be back. Chucky's got one more year. So, but a lot of these dudes, I mean, you
internet
make a good
be
point.
Lying.
The internet does be lying. But we definitely are losing a lot of key guys.
Yeah.
Middle linebacker and the nose guard position, I think, are the big ones. Like, losing Keith Kelsey, I don't know who's going to replace him. Losing D'Angelo Browns, maybe De'Asian Richardson, but that's one year. And De'Asian Richardson doesn't play consistently enough to do that. So they have to find somebody. Kyle Shortridge quit the team in October and came back, and that's why G.G. Robinson.
That's right. I saw his jersey, and I'm like, why is this weird that I'm looking at his jersey?
Yeah.
Oh, Cole Hikatini's gone, right?
Yeah, Cole Hikatini's gone.
Cole Hikatini's gone, but
is Tobridge
Jordan
gone as
Davis.
Well?
Who?
Yeah, right. Tobridge?
Texas
Tobridge,
A&M
Keith Tobridge is gone. Keith Tobridge. So you're losing two
and
tight
I think,
ends.
And I think we're going to have a couple wide receivers possibly transfer out.
Jordan right. Davis. Remember that name.
Yeah, Jordan Davis.
Is he the A&M transfer?
Yeah, he's a beast, man. He was a good one as a high school player.
He was in fall camp, and he was – kind of out of shape, but they, you know, they were working him. They were working him into shape, and he I think he's going to be fine. But you know, at tight end, they are losing two. They're going to pick up one, and they got a couple guys coming in that might be okay.
Crum would still be Crum will
yeah.
be Rum, back.
Crum's going to need to play a lot more. He hadn't played that much this year. Yeah. But what you know, one of the things that I'm looking for is, you know, building into next year. But what about the college football playoff committee? What about the committee? Are they going to value? Not, but 2-9-3 teams. Florida State.
Hold on. Before you get to that,
okay.
Because I was trying to segue into something real quick.
Okay, yeah.
They're losing a lot of players, and they got to recruit better and be on the lookout for Chris Person and I as we break down the recruiting
yes.
class. This week we have the skill position players coming up with some video in there for y'all, and my take and Chris's take and a little bit of notes, and as well as some uncommitted targets. So be on the lookout for that. Okay.
Yeah,
but no, but like a lot of guys
serious work, guys. I just want to say, like, we've been blogging for years, and this is the most in-depth, and guys that know what they're talking about and actually talk to their coaches and talk to their family members and get the scoop. It's not just a, hey, we read somewhere on a website that this guy can do this.
And
it's
something I've always been,
time investment that they're putting into these pieces.
I've been very critical of people who cover recruiting in years past on Twitter. Y'all know this. Dave and Chris have really made me change my tune on that. And my tune has changed to this. If you know what the fuck you're talking about, speak. Stop tweeting at children if you're if you don't have a relationship with the coaches.
Don't tweet recruits.
Unless you're bigging them up. Like, hey, congratulations on getting into the blue gray
or whatever. But
Army
stop.
All-American.
But you're not a recruiter. We pay coaches for that shit.
Right.
You know, the other guys are
the
still
worst version of our recruiting team is you.
Yeah.
Tweeting.
Yeah, right. But being in a group message with all you guys and Chris sharing, you know, like stuff that I'm not going to speak on it because it's not my place, but just like it's a completely different thing when you know people that are semi-professional at it. And the only reason I say semi is because
I get paid.
I get
paid for Florida Varsity. Rivals does cut me a check, and ain't much, but you know, it pays a couple bills. So shout out to Rivals.
But it's going to be interesting hearing you guys break down like guys like that signed last year. PJ Blue, like he's going to be a baller.
And hey, how much fun is National Signing Day going to be? Since everybody's taking off work.
We're doing it up.
Everybody's taking off work. We're going
to
be up
to
early.
Look into this.
Huh? We're pulling the kids out of school. Shout out.
You get up work at 5 a.m. You get up out of bed at 5 a.m. on National Signing Day, and then you just go.
That's why I'm going to have like a 6-course all day long meal planned out for us. Like we'll have a little breakfast item. Then we're going to hit up brunch. Then we're going to do lunch. Then we're going to do afternoon second lunch.
But no, there's a lot of talent that's left in this from last year's group that we haven't seen anything at all. Chris Taylor Yamanoa, PJ Blue, Jawan Pass, Malik Staples is playing. Des Fitzpatrick is like, I thought he would play over Seth Dawkins, Seth Dawkins is the real deal too.
Seth brings something that he doesn't bring, and it's just that jump ball height. But Des is the real deal, complete
I think so too.
Route runner. But they already had
I don't think Des Fitzpatrick drops the ball to goal line right before halftime like James Cook did.
I'm not gonna beat
Tobias Little could be the middle linebacker. The dude is built like Robert McCune. Robbie Bell will replace Tobias Hughley at center.
It's Taco Bell.
There's a lot of Taco Bell. I mean, there's a lot of really good dudes. Tabarius Peterson could be Louisville's next great outside linebacker. So, not only are we talking about dudes.
McCray.
Yeah, McCray also. And he's also redshirt.
Gary McCray.
Okay. So there's a lot of dudes that I'm excited about, but we're talking about freshmen.
Unknown commodities
that look good, have they played yet?
And this time, you know, when the season started, did we think Seth Dawkins was going to be on the field as much as he
was? No, I thought that's what
I was totally with Mark on that.
You don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of time to
Seth
have.
Seth got a fill-in for Staples next year. He's the new – he's, and that's why Bobby put him out there, because he's going to be seasoned. He's going to step in. He's going to take Staples' spot.
Yeah. I'm surprised we didn't see a lot of Pete this year. I really thought that we'd kind of see some more of him.
You know, he is a great player. He's a South Florida kid. That kid is a damn dog. If you were out there on the sidelines like Mark and I are.
Special teams baller.
He is the captain of special teams. He runs down and lays people out, and he just loves to be out there, man.
He's always got
a positive attitude, good energy on the bench. He's yucking it up with fans.
I always say I'm like always catching the ball, too. You know, like as a true freshman, sideline, end zone, Auburn game, other games, you know, I'm just like, that guy – it catches every ball that's thrown to him.
Junior year that he'll be able to, like, you know, put up some stats to where NFL teams will look at him as a wide receiver, and then they get him into camp. Like, even if he goes undrafted, I mean, he's only sophomore, but even if he goes undrafted free agent, but he makes a team. He'll make a team because of his special teams.
I think
teams
he'll make a team. I
because
think
he'll
see
be
him
great.
In the NFL playing special teams.
Yeah.
Even if he's like only like a 500-yard-a-year guy, but he does, but he can play some football.
You
got to
be a special type of crazy for special teams.
Pete's a special kind of crazy.
A buddy of mine who played for UofL, Jason Hilliard, 6'6", 350. He was playing for the Giants. I don't know if Peppers was with them or if this was when he was with the Cowboys. I can't remember. But he was talking about special teams. He said, we'd be running full speed at each other. You know, these are pros running really fast and they're really big. He's like, oh, man, it was brutal. I'm like, brutal? You're 6'6", 350. What do you mean? He was talking about basically running into Peppers and guys smaller than him. I'm like, I can't imagine. Imagine running into you.
Yeah, well, my buddy played special teams for the Houston Texans in a preseason game, and they put him out of. He had to defend the gunner. Yeah. And Baltimore was trying to figure out what they were going to do with this 6'7", 280-pound monster named Adalius Thomas. So they decided, hey, let's just throw him out as a gunner.
All right.
Man, he whipped the shit out of my buddy so bad that my friend really thought he was going to get cut, like, before he even got to the locker room.
Really?
And the special teams coach walked up to him, you know, in the tunnel as they're going back, and he said, you know, man, I'm hanging my head trying not to cry because I think my career is over now.
Yeah.
And they were like, we just wanted to test you and see how much heart you had. You're stupid, but, man, there's a spot for you on this roster.
Did you ever see that the Hard Knocks with the Falcons, and they got that young rookie receiver in there, and he's like, who plays receiver for this team? And he's like, Harry Douglas. Who else? Roddy White. Julio Jones. He said, how many balls are on the team? He said, one. He said, well, don't you think you better learn how to play special teams?
Yeah, I remember that.
That's the pathway to NFL.
But most players – I mean, honestly, if you're a first-year, second-year player, special teams is your boo. Because if you don't play special teams, you're getting cut. Because, you know, and you actually need to emulate whoever has your spot above you, because the offense, if that guy has to miss a game, they're going to want to have you, because that way the offense doesn't have to change that much.
I'm mad that you just used the word boo when talking about
special teams. It's your boo.
It's your boo.
Come on. Come on, Dave.
Kill myself.
Well, we're gonna give a moment here. Let Dave collect himself.
Sorry, I got
it. Then we're gonna come back and we're gonna be talking about Dave. Basketball. So we're gonna. I don't want to call it Game of the Week because it's not Game of the Week. You know, we'll call it Game of the Week because we got Purdue Wednesday. But let's move to basketball.
Program update.
All right, so down in Atlantis, Bahamas, people look like they were having some fun, you know? The team looked like
they looked like they were having maybe too much fun.
You know, the first couple games, it was Old Dominion was late night game. And I wasn't worried so much on that second game.
I was having fun that night. Mm-hmm. That was the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I was out having fun. No tweeting during the game.
All right, here's
and it goes to overtime.
Here, true story. So everyone was freaking out on Twitter.
Yeah.
And everyone was just having the worst pre-Thanksgiving night ever.
Ever.
I had a different night. I had to go to bed early.
You were asleep?
So
you woke up in the morning?
Here's the deal. My sister starts this how to ruin Thanksgiving in four words tweet text thing going on about 11:45 p.m. It wakes me up.
And I
pick up my phone and it says, Louisville wins in overtime. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And I put it back down. And I'm like, then I go and look through Twitter and just like, my whole phone's
implosion.
On fire.
It's the, implosion. Yeah.
Buildings exploding. And all this. My whole experience of that game was I went to bed. I woke up looking at the phone. Oh, look, we won. Put it back down.
Not going to worry about all these tweets. All these tweets that were happening. Yeah. I'm not looking at them.
The worst update to Twitter was the while you were away feature, because I was away for a fucking reason.
Yeah.
I didn't want to see this.
Right. See less of this. I always
like,
think
I'm always tapping that X. Like, no.
Yeah.
How many times have I hit this? How much less can you show me?
Yeah. And how many Kentucky fans can I mute? That's what I want to know.
Thank God they came out with the newest where you could like mute yourself from threads. Last week,
man.
On that update.
Oh,
like,
Christmas came
early.
I can't believe there are more Kentucky fans to mute every single day. I find more.
It's like whack-a-mole.
Yeah. Well, you know, after the football game, a lot more came out.
A lot more came out
of hiding. So let's talk about what we thought about the basketball team overall. It's early. We know how this works with Rick Pitino teams. It's a long journey. There's, you know, a lot of stuff to expect. But, you know, how'd you feel about it?
I'm not falling for the banana in the tailpipe again. this happens every year. We always have an early letdown loss. And I'm not going to consider Baylor a letdown loss outside of their coach being a clown.
Oregon's a very good team, and Baylor whooped their ass.
Well, Motley's an All-American.
Yeah.
You know, and their center's nothing to sneeze at either. Yeah. I kind of looked at it like this will be a good test for our bigs, where we'll have a little idea, you know, depending on how they can defend the 4 and 5 position against Baylor, we'll know what we've actually got. Honest had a great tournament, 6 blocks in one game. I mean, we don't need points from him. I think at some point the lid will come off the rim. You know, the Old Dominion game was frustrating because I don't know. I've seen a lot of UofL basketball in my lifetime. I don't know that I've ever seen a group of players make such athletic moves to the basket to miss a layup.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like there was a lid on it.
I was really surprised at how ugly that player from Wichita State was. What was that guy's name?
I don't know.
That
but
a human
every time,
being could look like
every
that.
Time that
Fran Camp.
Fran Camp. Yeah, like the ugliest man I've ever seen in my life.
Was he uglier than Dwayne Causewell?
I don't know who.
Every time that they said Fran Camp, I was like, is Fran Frischilla there? And does he have like a fan cam?
It's like a camp. Know? I don't know, but I thought he was the most odd looking person I've ever seen in my life.
What do you think about the fact that has anybody here been to the Bahamas?
Yes.
Okay. Is it legitimate paradise? Because even Dan Dockich can't act like an asshole when he's
it
there.
It must be.
I didn't know how to handle.
Was the best advertisement for the Bahamas that's ever happened because he's dick everywhere
else.
Or for
Louisville.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. You know, he kind of looks like Keith Legree a little bit, this Dan Coswell. Yeah.
But no.
I remember Frank him
Camp
now.
Is uglier than him. Shrimp kind of thing.
But no, so the Battle for Atlantis, as great as it is, we're never allowed to go back there again because the last time that Louisville played in the Battle for Atlantis, they lost in football the week before and the week of, and they also lost in the championship game to Duke and then lost in the championship game to Baylor.
Was that the Central Florida game?
No, it was the Syracuse and UConn week leading up to the in 2012.
Teddy Louisville got hurt.
Teddy got roughed up, and then luckily Lamar Jackson did get roughed up, but they lost to UConn in overtime after the Battle for Atlantis, and then Ryan Nassib crushed Louisville up in the carrier bone. It's the same exact setup, same exact scenario. Louisville football loses two football games and on both sides of the Battle for Atlantis, and Louisville loses in the championship game of the Battle for Atlantis.
All right, we're done.
But it was in the middle of the year of the Cardinal, and Louisville did win the national championship that year. So if you want to take that little grain, I don't know. What do you want to do? Do you want the national championship of basketball again and lose two football games?
Oh, yeah, I'll take it.
You would lose two football games?
Well, we've already lost the two football games, Mark, so it's out of our hands now.
It's 2020. It's 2020. And you got the option to go to the Battle for Atlantis. Do you want to see how this goes before you commit?
It's 2020, a dystopian America. Donald Trump has destroyed the Constitution.
We've got another presidential election behind us.
You know what?
At that point.
We'll have to see how this year plays out. Yeah, if we win the national championship,
we're going to always go to the Battle for Atlantis.
We have to go there and know that every 4 years.
Football games. Sorry, Bobby. Screw it.
This is what happens when you coach at a basketball school, homeboy.
Plan around 2020. Plan around 2020 every year.
Everything school or whatever y'all say. This ain't. Don't say.
I agree. I hate that. And I don't even think about basketball. Still not thinking about basketball.
Think about basketball. Yeah,
and sorry, guys.
I was watching the tournament this weekend, and it was just like, it's not basketball season.
We have
a football game
on Saturday.
I'm ready to talk about a Louisville Bowl.
We'll get to talking for a little bit. Basketball, we're not going to talk nearly as long as football. Obviously, we're still in the thick of that. It's early for
Purdue.
Basketball.
This is a big game. Purdue.
I was very excited for the Wichita State matchup, though, just because Greg Marshall's teams always play lights-out defense. They're always diving for every ball. They really are tough teams to beat because you have to beat them for the full 40 minutes. And I thought Louisville passed in flying colors. In the Baylor game, I thought Louisville looked great, you know, for the 20 minutes of the first half. I think the bigs did everything that they needed to do. I think, you know, the guards, everything was shooting well. The problem, what I didn't like to see, was that in the second half, when Baylor comes out, you know that there's no major coaching going on with their coach.
There's no adjustment.
The effort level changed for them, and we didn't match it. And that was basically what we did at halftime. If we match the intensity that we had in the first 20 minutes, then we will leave as champions of the Lost City, right?
Yeah.
So they came out, and they were almost doing 2-1 out-rebounding us, and we crushed them on the boards in the first half. There was absolutely no response from the team. So I'm like, okay, either one, they're tired because they had the late, you know, 1 a.m. game and turn around.
Yeah.
And they're just whatever. They're kind of just mentally a little exhausted. Or they're immature. And that's fine. Either one of those is fine.
Because they're going to get mature real quick.
Over the year, that kind of stuff works itself out. And those are things you want to flush out early. Now, what I ultimately feel about Baylor, because we know that they crushed Oregon. Oregon's a good basketball team. Is that Louisville has the potential to take a team that is top 10 worthy as Baylor and put them down by 22 points.
Yep.
Like they're good enough to
they
do that.
They can do that.
Okay, now what we need to develop is have 40 minutes.
Close.
That, you know, and that's what Rick's job will be this year.
I think, you know, Quentin Snyder and Donovan Mitchell, to me, played extremely great basketball these three games. I thought they played great. Everyone else was very inconsistent. Rick Pitino needs to either get Ding Adel going or he has to trust VJ King in those scenarios. And I know that will come as the season goes along because the four spot isn't going to get points. I mean, you're not going to get a whole lot of points out of Jalen and Ray, and you're not going to let a lot of points out of Anas and Mango and Motz. So everything has to come out of those first three spots. And if Ding Adel isn't going, you got to trust VJ King to go in there and get to the free throw line or pop. He's got a beautiful shot, quick release. What he didn't trust him on is playing that matchup zone that he put in 12 hours ahead of time.
Right, and he needs to. the reason why VJ needs to get playing time, and you know, we're not coaches, but we've watched basketball long enough. We know we can pick up on little things. He's the difference maker on are we a Final Four team or are we a Sweet 16 team?
Yeah.
And if he's not in the rotation and he's not a big part of it, then
where's his development? You know,
I really think
he knows his hot fire minute development.
I think VJ is the catalyst, and he's the. You know, he's the asterisk next to any projection you make about U of L is what kind of playing time is he getting.
And is Tony Hicks going to ever get off the bench?
I think Tony Hicks shot himself into oblivion.
I think he'll get another chance, but
he will.
Can he work through that?
It'll be interesting to see because, you know, I mean, I met him at tailgating, and I was really impressed with how polite he was and just how awesome he was and how much he appreciated U of L. And, you know, and coming from the situation he did, there was a lot of speculation on what's this guy's character, what's his attitude like, could this be another potential Chris Jones thing because he's the best player on, you know, the leading scorer for his team, and when the coach took over, they said, how about you just not play?
Yeah.
You know, that was a bizarre story to me.
Yeah.
Well, but there could be a lot of parts to that.
Watching him play, it seems like he just wants to, like, just do one thing, you know, go to the rim.
Well, it's a rewiring,
go to the rim and make a left. And a rewiring's fine, but this is a fifth-year senior.
Well, he's probably have never played on a team
that like really this. Needed. Yeah,
you know, like he probably in high school he did exactly what he did at Penn.
There's going to be
like we need you to do everything. Okay, I'll do everything. And so for a solid 8 years, 9 years probably, he was the guy. And now you know he comes on this team. He's like, you're like the eighth guy for us.
Right.
You know? But he's like, well, you've got to totally change all of your instincts.
Right.
And that's not easy.
There's going
to
be a time.
He has to be willing to accept the challenge.
I just feel like there's going to be a time when Louisville basketball is in a spot where everybody's dead. They need a spark. And Rick Pitino is going to say, hey, Tony, take it to the rim.
Yep.
And he's going to go, and he's going to get fouled. And
Dave, who drop a load on
him. And who gives a shit if he misses the layup, but if he goes to the line and gets fouled a bunch and he doesn't pass the ball, but he interjects some energy into the arena or into the team, then that's valuable. But you also need a dude that's not going to be a black hole. You need to be able to get, you know, he needs to pass the ball because he does have the ability to beat guys off the bounce and get into the lane. He needs to enhance that. And be a team basketball player. So I just wonder what's going to happen.
And I know this won't be a popular opinion, but in the second half, when their big guy Motley was having his way on the inside, a lot of it was because you know that we couldn't match his energy level. And to be quite honest, a lot of the big guys that we're using, you know, just can't. They're not physical. So I would actually like Pitino to trust Mats Stockman to get in the middle and just be a big wall, a big
just
loaf,
stay there.
A big space-eating loaf wall that Motley has to figure his way around because he's 7'2 and he's got long arms. And he just puts it up and he's got weight on him.
Yeah,
and he doesn't have to be a great player. He just has to be in the way.
Right, because he could have taken Ray Spalding and had Mats as his backup and then fronted Motley with Ray and shaded Ray over.
Right.
And then try to – because they didn't have –
If they could get the ball over Ray, then he has to deal with this big oaf behind him.
Yeah.
No,
that would have been something to try, but it's so early. I'm not going to get down about a loss to Baylor in basketball.
No, the only legit complaint I've got about any of the guys on the team is that, man, if Dang Adele had a mid-range jumper or worked on developing one, I think he would be the best player on the team by a mile.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kids today – they don't expect you to pull up on them when you're dribbling on them. That's a lost art. The mid-range jumpers just vanished from basketball. They think you're either going to pop the three or you're going to the – you know, you're taking it to the
– Have you seen shot charts in the NBA anymore?
Yeah.
It's just everything's on the outside or right at the rim. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And I just think, like, for his development, not even from a selfish standpoint and from, you know, like, what could he do for our team, I just think he makes himself a guaranteed lottery pick if he does that given his athleticism.
Yeah. You absolutely. You pull up jumper, and the guy's still running at the – the guy guarding is still running at the rim.
And then you know what? That opens up. Then you can take him off the dribble to the rim.
Yeah.
Yeah. So – I'd like to see that. That's my only doom and gloom of basketball.
Right. Well, Wednesday's Purdue. Purdue's a very good team. Took Villanova down to the wire. They're unfortunately very good where we're still kind of wondering, and they got a 7'2" guy who's absolutely a manimal in basketball. Timeout. Timeout on the floor.
I don't know, and I got to chime in. Nova ain't Philly.
Nova's not Philly. Yeah, Dave wants you to know Philly. Nova's a part of the
That's
the six.
That's mainline cheese and wine bull crap. Philly is blue collar, Rocky Balboa running up the steps, you know, trading haymakers in the middle of the ring for 12 rounds.
I did meet Ryan Arciadondo, however you say his name, and Chris Jenkins and that whole crew at the Yum Center this past year when they made the Final Four. That was a fun group. I liked that locker room a lot, I really did.
Yeah, I was pulling for them after we decided that we weren't getting the band, so I was a good luck charm for the fans.
Great moment, Chris Jenkins hitting that game winner. I love that. That was one of my favorite Final Fours ever.
Was that the famous vine of the security guard? Who was kind of halfway watching, he turns around and he had this big wide-eyed open mouth, and he was like trying not to respond because he was the security guy.
You know, I've seen that vine. Like a postseason ban is hell for a fan base. It's really tough. But of all the years for us to be on a ban and for me to watch the tournament just as a fan of college basketball with no cheering interest and not sitting there in the Final Four going, well, we beat this team, but we lost at that one, so could we be here hypothetically?
Right.
If we hadn't had that screw up in the Sweet 16, this was the best tournament. I think this might be the most entertaining tournament I've ever watched because I didn't care.
Yeah.
Right. I really didn't. I was just like, let's drink beer and gamble.
Pretty balanced field, too. I remember making a joke tournament, and everyone was an 8 seed. And I said, an overall number 8 seed is you.
Yeah, that. So. Never go chalk when you fill out your bracket, but last year it's like, man, I bet my coin flip bracket is going to look so much better than the one that I put any thought to because we had a lot of parody last year.
That was fun.
Y'all want to hear a quick Villanova story?
Yeah.
All right, so
we like Villanova. You know the Big East days. All right, we got feelings for Villanova.
All right, so back in the day, it was John Chaney was still there at Temple, and Jay Wright was new. It was that really nice class that had Randy Fooey, Nardi, and all those kids.
Eyeball guy.
Yeah, man, they were stacked. It was the year that they should have beat North Carolina.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
Because I poked. His eyeball was like hanging out of his face. Right, looked like it.
All right, so.
Don't talk about it.
So it was the beginning of the year, and Temple and Nova played Midnight Madness, right? Yep. So it's midnight, and these Nova kids, they come out from the main line with their trust funds and shit and their polos, and Temple plays at the Leocora Center, and it is dead smack in the hood. You know, the street that runs adjacent to the stadium is called Cecil B. Moore. Cecil B. Moore is a Philly legend. He was like a black activist talk radio host that, got his name in the middle of North Philly, right? So I can't stand Villanova fans. So they get off the bus, and they're wilding out, and they got beers in their hands as they're coming off the party bus, and they bump into this Temple cop. Now, Temple cops are actually Philly cops. They're just – they have a billet to work at Temple, and he like spills beer on his cop, and the cop just slams his ass and locks him up, puts the zip ties on him. The next dude comes off, and he's got his beer zip tie slammed against the bus. They got like 9 Nova fans.
We got
lined
no
up
time.
On the bus. Yeah. So anyway, they're selling beer in there at midnight at the Leocora Center. So these kids are already wasted, and they had the plastic Miller Lite. It was like when the plastic bottles started first coming out. The ones they give us at the tent at the trolley.
Yeah.
And so it's like 5 minutes into the game, and like this beer just flies out from the nosebleed seats right onto the floor, and it was a Nova fan, and everybody looks up, and John Chaney jumps up, and John Chaney's loud as hell when he's mad. He's like, "Hey, Chaney, you want to control your damn kids? Get this shit out of here." And so all the beer got knocked, like they cut the beer sales off, so they got all these drunk kids in the corridors looking for beer, and no one's selling beer. And in Philly, you have a
turning
large
tricks for high lives.
In Philly, you got like a large Sunni Muslim population, right? And they all work at like the Eagles games and at the Temple games, and so there's all these like white boys like, "What do you mean there's no more beer?" And you see like the workers there like pointing fingers in these kids' face, like, "I'm gonna fuck you up, white boy, get the fuck out of my face." Like, "Sorry, man." Sorry, dude.
Sorry, but, mister.
Yeah, so there was a couple fights in the corridor. A couple of kids had to get carried out of there. But I hate Villanova fans, and that was my midnight. And they never had Midnight Madness again, which sucks.
See, that's why we bring Dave on. It's like it's all Louisville, all the time around here. But, we love college sports, and now you got a story behind it.
Philly's awesome.
I've always wanted to see a game at the Palestra.
Yes.
I always wanted to go. I've never been able to do that. And I know we played in Hinkle up in Indianapolis, right? But the Palestra would be amazing. Like, I don't know how you get to a game up there, how Louisville gets up. I would go. I would just make
go.
That time.
Just go. It's
no, but I
want to
see Louisville play there. I want to see Louisville play there.
Well, they don't do that. They do the Big Five tournament.
I know.
All right, folks. So that's all it is for basketball. We're going to wrap up a brief period of dudes talking. We're going to see, we got to kick a few things around, maybe talk about what the hell we're going to do about the bowl. We're going to talk about our feelings. I don't know what we're going to talk about. So let's go to that now.
A little of this, a little of that. It's time for Dudes Talking.
All right, so we could touch on the start with the bowl, I guess. You know, we don't know
what's the committee going to do.
We don't know, or does the committee pick the New Year's Six?
Yeah, they pick the New Year's Six. So based on rules, so if Florida State is ahead of Louisville by the committee's rankings, then Florida State would thereby get the Orange Bowl.
Here's I don't know the actual definition.
Yeah, Dave's got the actual.
It's the highest ranked non-playoff ACC team.
Correct.
Will go to the Orange Bowl. So
based on the committee's ranking,
if Clemson's and lose to Virginia Tech, then Clemson will probably go to the Orange
Bowl.
Now the question is, does FSU end up ranked higher in the playoff committee rankings than Louisville? And they do what they want to do. They're forget the AP poll, the coaches poll. They are their own entity, and they set it up that way. Now, I got into it a little bit with Andy Sweeney, who was like, oh, this isn't even a discussion. And this is after, like, you know, 9 tweets. I'm like, this is literally a discussion we're having right now.
Has to be. They're both 9 and 3 teams talking.
Well, let's look at the rest. So the college playoff committee says they look at the entire body of work. They're not prisoners of the moment, okay? So they look at the whole season, all right? Louisville smashes FSU head-to-head.
41 points.
Just blows them out. Okay, now it's still early. It but, okay, FSU loses at home on a long field goal to UNC. How did Kentucky just lose? Long field goal. All right. Now, there was a blowout loss in there for FSU, and there's a blowout loss for Louisville. Louisville got blown out by Houston. But guess who FSU got blown out? Louisville.
All right.
So, and then both teams.
Play Clemson close.
Tough loss to Clemson. Louisville loses to Clemson on the road.
Right. Yeah.
In Death Valley, in a hostile environment, when Clemson's at full force, no injuries, nothing.
Yeah.
And FSU loses in an embarrassing way at the end of the game, where they have like 3 free false starts in a row, and they just choke and lose the game. So, yeah. I mean, if I'm looking, and I'm a Florida State dude, I got a Florida State hat on right now, and if I'm looking at the overall body of work, people say, oh, they finished well. Man, they beat Syracuse's backup quarterback. They almost lost to NC State.
Yeah, nearly did. And what did Louisville do to NC State?
And crushed them. And if NC State's safety don't drop that pick in the end zone, they win that game. You know what I'm saying? And then they beat Florida. Florida fucking sucks. You know what I'm saying? If you're a Florida Gator fan, you know it. Everybody knows it. You play in the SEC East. The SEC East is garbage. And they have no quarterback. They got Appleby. They got a Purdue transfer there.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
A Purdue transfer.
And they're garbage. Well, the only way they scored a touchdown was off the Nyquan Murray fumbled a punt return, and they scored on it. They ain't scored a touchdown on FSU in like 10 quarters.
I agree completely with Dave. And, you know, if we get
I'm shocked.
Provided that Clemson wins. You know, and they don't Clemson, which I'm not convinced won't happen because
Virginia Tech's playing great.
Virginia Tech folds in big games sometimes, man. They have been up and down this year. I think Clemson wins that pretty easily.
Guys, yeah. I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm gonna be a really salty Louisville fan if we miss out on the Orange Bowl with one conference loss.
You're gonna go to Citrus Bowl probably.
If we don't end up in the Orange Bowl, yeah.
And you'll probably play Florida in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, or Michigan in the Orange.
The thing I'm thinking is,
play Michigan is how, Orange Bowl.
You don't play. How much does this work out? Because obviously, if you go by recency, then you're like, well, Louisville kind of feels blah, so I'm not picking Louisville.
That's what the committee's dealing with.
You know, that's they're human beings, and that's stuff they have to deal with. But as they look at the total body of work, and they're not biased, and they're fair, and these are wonderful human beings, and none of the – I mean, how much of it is this? Hey, guys, Orange Bowl commissioner guy, Florida State and Louisville, they're kind of the same. Who do you want down there?
Heisman.
Do you think
they're actually going to say, these are the same two damn teams. Who do you want down there?
I
Orange Bowl, you pick. You tell us. We'll just rank them that way.
Well, that has some input. But look, I talk to a lot of people down in Florida all the time. I said, well, why wouldn't they just take Florida State? You know, it's an easy trip. You know, you don't got to worry about selling tickets. And they said that Florida State fans are funny about traveling to Miami, and it's also like a loss of a season for Florida State. Louisville fans, on the other hand, travel very well to bowl games. And although there's a little bit of a hangover right now, I guarantee you over the next 3 weeks, Talk Radio is going to pump up excitement and get Louisville fans ready.
Especially
let's go on down to Miami.
Train keeps going.
I think Louisville fans will travel and fill that stadium better than Florida State. That's my hot take. And that comes from me having conversations with people that actually are in Florida in Tallahassee, in Miami, in St. Pete that will say that are telling me, dude, no, you're wrong. Because I said, nah, Florida State are going to totally.
But it makes sense. But it makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you live here. It's 20 degrees and rainy outside. You tell me that we need to plan a trip to Miami in January? Yeah. I can handle that.
Yep. Yeah.
Whereas when
all
you're
day.
In, whereas when you're, you know.
With them crush credentials, bro.
That's right. You want to go?
Hell yeah, I'm rolling, dog.
Oh, yeah.
I'm dropping the kids off somewhere.
Whole crew's right. going down.
We'll see how many we can get. All right.
Sweet.
We'll apply for everybody.
We've won every time I had media credentials, by the way.
Yeah, and then, and so then by the way, Dave.
We know the pointers are
Dave
out.
Went to. Yeah, the pointers are not never getting credentialed. Yeah, they've got a whole
they went
year.
To Houston and Kentucky. Thanks. Yes.
They're out. The pointer sisters are done.
I thought we fired Keith's ass in like the first podcast. How did this happen?
Yeah, he keeps
how did he
showing
make
up.
It to the Kentucky
he keeps
game?
Showing up.
You took Drew all the way to Houston.
I did. I took Drew all the way to Houston. But we had fun. I mean, we did. But no, like, I don't know. I don't know what I want. I know that I want Louisville to have a game against the Michigan would be amazing because, when, not to make a basketball reference, it's kind of awkward, but like when Louisville went to the Final Four in 12, it paid huge dividends for the 13 team. And I think the one thing that this football program is missing and missed this year was being in the pressure cooker of being in the college football playoff, being in the Heisman Trophy race, and kind of, you know, a lot of these guys, and that, you know, a lot of the dudes that Louisville relies on, they've been with the program 2 years. Think about it. Cole Hickatini, Devontae Fields, Jamari Staples, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Smith, Travion Samuel, Jerron Christian, all these dudes that were really relying heavily on 18 months ago were somewhere else.
Yeah.
And now they're a part of Louisville football. It's weird, you know what I'm saying?
There's a flip side to look at that, too, and say how many times do you get that. Now, especially when you look at head coaches that have, like, these runs, these successes, you know, like even Urban Meyer, you know, Jimbo Fisher, Urban Meyer. You look at these guys and you say, well, why did they win? Well, they had this franchise, Tim Tebow.
Yeah, they had
Jameis Winston. And now Bobby has Lamar.
Ward Jr. at Houston.
And you lose three games with the Lamar. And this is the season where no one sees it coming. They sneak up on you. Deshaun Watson last year just blew everybody out of the water. Next year is the now you got to be a grown man. Now you got to make business decisions. Now you got 1 foot out the door possibly. So this was the – this
hands
was
off
the
once
year,
or
man.
Twice more.
This
throw it into the flats once
well, there's
or twice
only ever
more.
Been two – there's been two games in Bobby Petrino's seven-year tenure as the Louisville's head coach where I felt like they were totally unprepared. And the first one was 2005. They went down to Tampa and got crushed by South Florida.
Yeah.
Absolutely demolished. And then against Houston, I felt like they were absolutely totally unprepared.
Yeah,
there was a Memphis during Auburn Gate.
There was a Memphis, correct? But they didn't get blown. They didn't get like
35-7.
Oh, they did. That was a Petrino.
Let me ask. Okay, you
it was when he
forget
was kind of
that.
Flirting.
Wasn't it the D'Angelo Williams?
That was 2003, correct?
Ran all over us.
That was year 04. One. That was year one.
03 or 04.
Yeah, 2003 had to be.
I heard some stuff on Twitter, and I get fans get mad. And Joe always says, you know, hey, everybody vent on Twitter. You got a day to vent, right?
Yeah.
You get a vent day, and then you got to calm down. All right, so everybody's calm
down. And the flip side of that coin is, I meant to mention this during the football talk. Sorry, but I wanted to get this out. All you UK fans that are still going on about it on Monday, if by Tuesday – y'all might need to seek like medical attention for that erection you've got going, because like it's getting out of control, guys. Like, you won, it's cool. We all ate crow. Yeah. My man Crumbs Revenge tweeted out this morning: "Be nice to your coworkers."
Yeah,
we all step off the damn elevator at work, and it's like getting attacked by that damn bear in the redneck. Like,
I didn't have that experience.
I didn't watch that movie, but I know
which
what,
is
what
cool
happened
for a day or two, but
and it wasn't good.
But back to your point.
All right, well, what I want to know is this: so I saw my Twitter was blown up. It's like the last 2 weeks they didn't look unprepared, and to me, I thought, you know, Bobby had a good game plan on offense, and the defense came out doing what they did. I just don't think they're ready for Kentucky to freaking play the best game they've ever played.
Right. Kentucky played very well.
For Johnson to just be turned into goddamn Dan Marino out there was ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? So I think that, you know, you're a prisoner in a moment. Oh, they weren't prepared. You go to, you know, you go to your knee-jerk cliche, your knee-jerk banal statement. But
fire somebody.
Fire everybody. You don't fucking
– I don't think anybody needs to get fired.
Right. Yeah. But – do you think that they were prepared coming into Kentucky? Because I think it was more of a situation of Kentucky just playing out of their minds and executing very well, more so. And some you know, hammies getting pulled.
Right. I think there were a lot of injuries. I felt like offensively they played well, but the turnover was kind of the tragic flaw of the season.
Well,
if you really think about, like, what happened in the Clemson game, the three turnovers, the Houston game with the timely turnovers, and then Kentucky with four. I mean, you know, two of those are inside in scoring territory.
Yeah, the red zone turnovers are killer. And there was a couple, you know, a lot of Kentucky fans were kind of like making fun of Lamar a little bit. I'm like, I said, you know, the problem wasn't offense. We scored 38 points. That should be enough to win the ball game. Lamar by himself had 450 yards. He had four touchdowns. And if you count the 80-yard pass Hail Mary as a turnover, well, then you don't understand turnovers. And then you had one where it was just a little hot off the wide receiver's hand, so it wasn't like he just chucked it straight to a Kentucky dude's chest. So Lamar in the offense was fine. Did we leave some points on the field? Probably less than points on the field. Yeah, but 38 points and the yards they had was fine. 600 yards giving up on defense, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's how you lose a ball game.
So yes or no, prepared or not?
I think offensively prepared. Defensively, I can't confirm or deny, but defense. I will say Kentucky played very well. Offensive Kentucky played great. Kentucky played great. And I can say good game, Kentucky. You know, God damn it.
I think Louisville was prepared offensively, but defensively in a very, very difficult spot, roster-wise and also health. Mentally. I think health was a big part of it, but then I think
– not making excuses, but objectively, I saw some injuries.
There were a lot of injuries that you're playing guys that don't normally play, and then you have your experienced guys that are making – mistakes that you didn't see them make all year. And like Devontae Fields and James Turner were talking about earlier, just giving up the edge. I don't understand that.
As far as the offense goes, I think despite not really the line not blocking well, offensive line didn't have their first penalty until well into the fourth
quarter. Right, penalties are way down.
I'm going to say in that aspect, I do believe that we were focused. I do believe Klonakis knew he got his ass kicked and he went back to the drawing board, you know, and really I think they had a good week of practice. To say that they weren't prepared on defense, I think that's kind of a loaded question, though, because we've spent the entire season talking about how Grantham's defense is predicated.
He did his thing in Kentucky.
We're gonna stop this.
It's not like they weren't prepared. In my opinion, it was just
our game plan is
they
our
countered
game.
It. They yeah. were watching all year. They're like, we got something for that ass. Keep it a secret.
We're a counter puncher. You know, like we're not gonna block and absorb hits. And when you can't counter, you can't counter. And we couldn't parry anything.
And you guys bring heat off the edge with your DBs. And guess what? Kentucky has one of the best blocking tight ends in Conrad in the entire country, and he just would just stonewall people, man. And that kid was sitting back there
with a
green jersey. Yeah, so I don't think – I don't want to go to the extent of saying that the defense was unprepared either. I just want to say, you know, tip of the hat. Sometimes it's tip of the hat. You hate to do it to your rivals. Florida State beats Miami 7 years straight, Florida 4 years, so I forgot what it's like to lose to a rival. 2012 was the last time, but, yo, I get it. It must suck. But one more thing. You were in the press conference.
Yeah.
Rashawn Myers. Okay, now,
Rashawn
usually – is you know, very jovial. He's a good dude. Like I see him in there, you know, light skinned dude with the light eyes, so he stands out. And he usually asks good
big
questions.
Dude too.
Yeah, big dude, Marine, you know, good guy. He usually asks, you know, really good, thoughtful questions, kinda like what the readers want to hear and also X and O stuff.
Well, people are probably gonna ask if you brought somebody in off the parking lot, that's what Rashawn's gonna ask.
Do you think Bobby kinda used him as a kind of like a rod to get up out of there?
No, I
what
think.
What
did he ask? Because you were there.
He asked, do you think that, basically in a nutshell, do you think Lamar Jackson passed up a few opportunities to run today and stayed in the pocket too long? And to be honest with you.
Ooh, that's all he asked? Bobby was like saying he was attacking it.
He said that was a dumb question, terrible.
Yeah, but he said he's a good kid. He never gives a.
You know, Bobby was like, he's a real competitor. I think Bobby was pissed off. I think he was. Definitely, I think he took the question totally wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that he said what he wanted to say in his opening statement, took one question, got to Rashawn's question, and it didn't matter if you'd asked him, hey, man, did you have a nice Thanksgiving? I think he was getting the fuck out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, I think Rashawn Myers was just sort of like the guy who asked the question at the wrong time. You know, I think he would if he had asked that question after a three-point win – it would have been.
And sometimes, I didn't hear what he asked. I could guess by the answer, but I don't know how he asked. But sometimes you have the right like subject matter you want to ask about. But when you ask, you sound like you're a coach, and coaches know you're not a coach. And so it's also about how you deliver that question to the coach, you know, because he's like, he's not having it. You're not a coach. You can just sit down. That was a fine question, but you're going
to
shut the
hell
up.
You could say, who are you to be asking me this shit?
It's the shit that I gave Dave about how excited he was to ask Bobby a question. And I'm like, I want no part of that.
It's all about how you work.
I feel like I could have been in there too and just been like, hey, coach, so are you a ham or a turkey guy for Thanksgiving? And he'd be like, you fucking idiot. Thanksgiving's for turkey, ham's for Christmas. Actually, fucking, I'm out. And he just would have walked out.
He just would have been out. Exactly.
And there I am stuck being like the laughing stock in the room for the time. And everybody's like, thanks, TBG. No, we don't get to ask these hard-hitting questions that we had.
Keith would have been like, eggnog or boiled custard.
Right.
Well, it is kind of interesting, though, like, because we have two coaches that are like, and Bobby Petrino and Rick Pitino, who are amazing when they win,
amazing in victory,
and they are absolutely horrible in defeat.
Good. You know, that's what I want to see.
But like, if you ask Rick Pitino a question about rebounding after a loss, and you're just like, "Hey, you know, you got beat on the boards by 8 today. What'd you see?" They're like, "You know, your question sucks. I hate your mother. Yeah. I hate your whole line."
Well, you've got it all figured out.
Mom should have swallowed.
I'll ask you the question.
Well, Mark, on September 11th, 2001, the world changed.
A lot of hand gesturing, a lot of Pitino posturing.
And what we
can't see this.
What we've done since then is we've brought in some of the most amazing shooters I've ever seen in my life. Mike Merrim, second to none. Rick's deflection is just like, okay, I'm going to turn it off now.
You might get a question out of Rick Pitino. You might get some crazy deflection. Bobby Petrino may walk out, but you just learn how to question these guys in victory and defeat. I actually don't ask a lot of questions after a win.
Smart.
After a loss, I'm trying to I might ask about a specific instance. What did you see on this play, and you know, what was your perspective of that? And then you get them talking on something, and then they'll roll with it.
I had my question.
Yeah.
And it was going to be, what are you going to go in there and tell the kids after this?
Yeah.
That's what I really wanted
to know.
That's
a good one, yeah.
What are you going to tell the kids?
Yeah.
And when you say kids, I think you kind of...
You lessen it.
You do, you know? And it's kind of like a human question.
Throw in your kids?
I was enjoying my time.
Your young adult sons.
But what? I wanted to be there to ask that question.
You know, after
I felt bad, man, especially for those kids. After being in there and interviewing them, because most people aren't watching the post-game interviews, but when you're there and you get to see, like, their personality,
their face,
their energy, you can't help but root for these kids.
It's why I always say stop bitching about these kids on Twitter. Stop attacking them as human beings. Stop even attacking their games, because you see a football player, the people that are around it, the people that have friends that have participated, the people who have played college sports. You understand those are human beings out there. And, you know,
they owe you nothing. You didn't pay a dollar to be part owner of a child.
No. I think Bobby Petrino.
Joe actually has done that in real life.
Shit, man. I don't even have kids of my own. Yeah, what are you talking about buying one?
Well, then we're at least going to admit on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, we did.
A Christmas angel.
He actually sponsored.
This is an angel tree for Cardinal Athletics.
There you go. Yeah, we should do an angel tree.
Yeah, man. We've been hooking.
Crunch on tree.
We've been hooking little dude from Tanzania for up.
But actually, I think Bobby Petrino won this whole group over, to be honest with you, after loss 3 last year, when they almost beat Clemson, and they lost 3 in a row, and they lost to Auburn, Houston, and Clemson. And he walked into that locker room, and he said, I'm proud of your effort. We're going to go back to work, and we're going to win the next game.
Yeah, I can see Bobby saying that.
You know what I mean? It was like, he basically knew. Compare the enthusiasm Bobby Petrino this preseason to last preseason, he knew that these kids were in his program was in a tough spot coming in because they were going to rely on so many new players.
Yeah.
And then this year, he's like, yep, I got a good team. Yeah, you know?
But year 4, Bobby ain't going to walk in after 3 straight losses and be so fine. Yeah.
No. Right. No, but
straight business. You're done. I shouldn't have recruited you.
He lost some stupid ones in 05, and then it turned it into, are we going to finish? Are we going to go out there? Do we mean business? We were young last year. We were in a transition from 04 to 05. Now from 05 to 06, do we mean business or not? And I think that's what we're really looking at going in from 16 to 17, because this team could be for real. They have some things they got to definitely answer. Personnel-wise, I'm definitely curious on how they're going to answer middle linebacker and nose guard, but I like everything else that's potential.
Sometimes Marcus Jones-Lee's and Elvis Dumervil steps
Maybe somebody
in.
Else steps up.
You just don't know what you're going to run into. So, folks, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Crunch Zone Podcast. Don't forget to check us out on Google Play, iStitcher Radio and iTunes. Not iStitcher, Stitcher Radio, iTunes. You can download us on any old podcast app. Thank you for Ken Harbison for stopping in.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for the Ken ribs. Pro.
Thanks for the ribs, TBG.
Thanks for the ribs, TBG.
For the Elijah Craig, Mike.
Elijah Craig might have paid us a visit. just remember, the losses always hurt the kids worse than the fans, so it's our job to pick these guys up. So we've got basketball and we've got football left to play this year, and I expect everybody to be on their A game. I know I'll be. So, folks, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll catch you next week on the Crunch Zone Podcast.
Help the show by leaving a rating and review behind on iTunes, Google Play, and on the Stitcher Radio app. Plus, you can dig deeper with the guys on Twitter, Facebook, and at thecrunchzone.com. Thanks for listening, Cards fans.